You are listening to Fanthatrax.
Because of the following special program, Wonder Woman and the Incredible Hulk will not be presented this evening.
Time to get all your Star Wars news in a single file. This is Making Tracks. Here are your hosts, Mark Newbold and Mark Mulcaster.
That's not true. That's impossible.
Hello and welcome to episode 134 of Making Tracks, brought to you by those fine folk over at fanfortracks.com. My name's Mark, I'm one of your co-hosts, and this week I am joined, like last week, with a man who makes General Grievous sound healthy. It's Mr. Mark Newbold. Mark, how are you doing? How's that cough?
It's still there. I feel fine. I feel good. I've been busy doing stuff around the house all weekend, but yeah, this cough doesn't want to go. It will not leave.
It's like the unwanted house guest.
It is very much like the unwanted house guest, yes.
So how's things with you, dude, in terms of like your week and things in Star Wars? Has it been busy on the site?
Yeah, site's been busy, ticking over nicely. Fairly quiet in my personal Star Wars world. The big thing I've done is I've been working upstairs, moving stuff around in the collection room. So that's been keeping me busy. I've moved loads. So that's been done. So it's a big project. And the spare room is just going to be boxes, boxes, boxes. But, you know, once it's done, it's done. A couple of bookcases to build. Yeah, a lot of effort, but worth it, I think. How about you?
I did very little in terms of Star Wars stuff. Admittedly, I have got, it's a good 2 inches worth of Star Wars comics that I need to start working my way through, which I did start. I think I read about 8 or something in one day just because, you know, it was sunny. I'll sit outside and bash through a few comics and that. So I'm slowly catching up. But obviously, before we get into the news, have you had any new acquisitions or have you rediscovered stuff that you didn't realise you had?
Not so much that, because I didn't realise quite how many duplicates I've got. It's taking up way too much room in that spare room and I need the space. Going through the top room has been really interesting. I've been sorting posters out, pulling things out of the way to put new things in, you know, things like that. So that's been all good. But nothing new has come through this week, apart from I got the latest 4 Essential Legends collection books. But other than that, no, not an awful lot. How about yourself?
I've got stuff coming, or I should say it's now sat in the post office depot waiting to be collected, because annoyingly, when I tend to go to the gym, it's when like Royal Mail tends to drop off their stuff. And unlike all the other couriers in the land who seem to be quite happy to dump stuff at my front door and just scarper, Royal Mail is still consistently sticking a little red card through my letterbox to say, go and collect it.
Hi, this is Guy Henry and you're listening to Fanthatrax. Enjoy.
This must have come, or maybe it didn't come as a shock to Disney, but it came as a shock, I think, to a lot of the readers. So Florida lawmakers have voted to strip Disney World of its special self-governing status, which basically means they've got to pay millions of extra dollars in taxes. This comes hot on the heels after Disney spoke up against that controversial parental rights in education bill, which is better known as the Don't Say Gay law. So basically, Disney, because of their employees obviously wanting to stand against that law, Disney then stood behind their employees and said that they were against this law in Florida, which makes all the sense because obviously Disney's got massive holdings down there, a lot of staff down there, a lot of staff moving down there. Mm-hmm. It really is their sort of center of their business and action and the things they're doing the most because they have this tremendous area of land that they can expand. And in answer to that, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has basically signed a bill which has done away with their tax exemption or tax benefits that they had and have had since the late 60s and something known as the Reedy Creek Improvement District, which is now what we know as Disney World. So huge repercussions. And it basically means that by the 1st of June next year, 2023, that special district that Disney has enjoyed and had, and believe it or not, like Mr. Burns, able to build a nuclear power plant on if they want to.
Yeah.
All of that is gone. So what do you make of that?
Like you said, it could have really big ramifications. on future Disney developments down in Florida. I think the big thing that both me and you spoke about last week when this news dropped was this is something that we were totally unaware of. Like you said, they can build their own power plant, airport, and I think they have their own fire department and stuff like that. It's almost like a little state within Florida. You know, this plays very well into Governor Ron DeSantis' base. You know, he's a GOP and kind of right standing. And so this is probably something that will resonate potentially with some of his fan base. We know from, or just about every election in the 20th century, Florida plays a huge part. It's a huge swing state. And, you know, normally whoever wins Florida will win the US presidency. Mm. So it's obviously a kind of a vital thing from that perspective. And of course, it's something that we're seeing more of in the US, I believe, more than I think over here, whereby US firms, Lucasfilm, for example, that are making stand and are speaking out on these kind of these social policies and, you know, changes in, you know, state law and stuff like that, which is also something that could potentially have further ramifications for Lucasfilm further down the line, not only just Disney. So, you know, you could almost say this sounds like it could be a plot from a Clone Wars episode. You could just see it now, like a Republic world's been stripped of its special tax status, you know, and the Jedi have been sent to investigate. I mean, it's almost like the crawl for Phantom Menace, you know. So, well, it's almost like real life mirroring fiction. So, yeah, it's really interesting.
It's weird in the sense that we just recently got back from Florida.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you do. You see that they've got their own fire engines. They've got their own security people within Disney. There's buses that have done tens of thousands of miles and never left Disney property. So it's a huge place. It's an incredible place. Given that they're the largest private employer in Florida, 80,000 people work for Disney. What's the ramifications of that? Now, the governor's said what he said, plans to make this action happen. Disney are now losing this privileged situation that they got, because back in the 60s, it was, please develop this area. Please make something of this land. We'll give you the most incredible tax breaks you could ever dream of if you develop this land. You step forward to 2022 and there's Universal literally just down the road. Well, they presumably don't get anything like those kind of tax breaks or that kind of latitude to do with their land that Disney can do with theirs, to the point that Disney, from what I've gathered from this article, Disney didn't need planning permission to build, let's say, Galaxy's Edge. But after June next year, Disney will have to run everything through planning permission. And will that become a problem? Could Universal oppose it? Will locals oppose it? Does it become politicized? Of course it does. These things are not issues that Disney have really had to deal with up until now. It's certainly not in Florida.
The ramifications of that obviously is, you know, a loss in earnings, or at least, you know, a certain amount more payable in, you know, tax. The whole slowdown in potentially being able to develop new lands, or, you know, just expansions to existing lands, that could be the thing that really does hamper Disney. It's not like these lands and expansions kind of pop up overnight. They take a long time to plan and to develop. And so if suddenly, you know, you've now got to go through all the red tape that, I mean, everybody else does, then that's obviously going to kind of affect their timelines. Like you said, from Universal's perspective, that creates a more level playing field. So potentially, whilst we might see this as a negative thing, it might also be a positive thing, because it might mean that Disney now has to work a little bit harder to develop things and be a little bit more savvy with how they do develop things.
When we went last in, 2017 as a family to 2022, okay, it's 5 years, but the parking had gone up an awful lot and just the general cost of living has gone up. It's not as cheap to go to Florida as it was coming from the UK anyway. Presumably to a similar degree for people who live there, you know, annual pass holders and so on and so forth. As things move forward, costs escalate. And now with these taxes, Disney's got to find that money from somewhere. They've had a lot of criticism because they've changed certain practical things within the park. Lightning passes have changed. They brought Genie in, which is more money for people to pay if they want to not queue for all the rides. It's a business. It's another expense that they've now got to absorb somehow. Will that make them reticent? But they've kind of got to, because, you know, to stay ahead of the curve, because it's Disney. Universal, if they suddenly go, well, this isn't costing us any more in tax. It's not hurting us any more than it was anyway. So why don't we just gun it and build another great big extension to Harry Potter World or whatever? And Disney are suddenly thinking, well, wow, now we cost out these things and all of a sudden there's this tax on top. It's not like Disney can just get helicopters on each corner and lift the whole thing out and move it somewhere else in the States, because, you know, you go too far north and it's too cold in the winter. Florida's perfect for the climate and everything else, and location and international airport and all the other things. They've kind of got them by the short and curlies, haven't they?
I mean, I suppose potentially what it could mean is, could they reduce the expansion and development of Disney World and look to develop Shanghai or Paris rather than Disney Florida? Or do they even look for maybe another site in another state in the US that they could maybe build another Disney World or something, which obviously would be huge and massive and would be a massive blow for Florida? But at the same time, you know, I suppose Disney is a business. They need to make money. They need to keep their shareholders happy. I think we'll see over the next year or so how this will affect Disney and obviously Florida.
There's going to be a lot of hemming and hawing and toing and froing, because this will no doubt have massive ramifications for the whole of the area. It's mostly Osceola County, I think, from what I can tell. 80,000 people, that's a huge amount of people to employ for one company in that state. A lot more of this story to run, I would imagine.
I'm Brian Herring, BB8 Puppeteer, and you're listening to FanthaTracks. That'll learn you.
So as the day nears, 27th of May, two episodes of Obi-Wan Kenobi landing on Disney+. The world's going to go nuts when this show lands, just because we've been so keenly waiting for it. News and images are starting to seep out, and one of them that was found by the All Things Kenobi site was a banner showing Obi-Wan and Vader, very Revenge of the Sith-looking artwork, I've got to say, with the two of them clashing in the middle. What did you make of this? It's very evocative. It's classic Star Wars sort of banner art, isn't it? No missing what this is about.
No, exactly. I think if anybody is kind of under any misconceptions that Darth Vader is only going to play a small part in the series, I think this banner pretty much dispels that. You're right, it does very much evoke Revenge of the Sith and also Revenge / Return of the Jedi artwork with the kind of like the silhouettes of the lightsabers. It's just a cool image, and it's just great to see that they put this kind of level of detail into the artwork. I mean, the one thing that I'm really curious about is, because obviously we had that epic lightsaber duel between Anakin and Obi-Wan in Revenge of the Sith, and obviously then we kind of jump to the one that we see in A New Hope, and the two are different in terms of style and length and style, partly because of the time when they filmed A New Hope, but also because of his age, he wasn't able to obviously be quite so spry and acrobatic. So I'm really interested to see if they try and find a middle sweet spot and make any lightsaber fight, assuming we do actually get one, you know, what side are they going to be kind of like leaning towards, and how are they going to use this maybe as a transitional point between the two lightsaber fights?
You know, I've thought about this over the years, and I do wonder, Ben in A New Hope is quite judicious with the words that he uses. He chooses his words very well.
Yeah.
Uses that get out of jail card, you know, the whole certain point of view thing in Jedi, which when Luke's kind of understandably hurt that he's not been told the complete truth from the off, especially in terms of Luke. Not so much Leia, because Leia's already on the galactic stage at the time of A New Hope as a senator. But Luke isn't.
Yeah.
And this is the Force Awakening for Luke, bringing Luke onto the playing field, if you like. And it's quite a clever, cautious, I think, quite well thought out process. I think Obi-Wan in the Obi-Wan TV series could very well hand Vader his arse on a plate, because I don't think Ben is as feeble as we may think. Even though he's been reasonably inactive, as you would imagine. And we're going to learn about how inactive he's been, because there's Inquisitors out there. The Emperor and Vader want them hunted down. So clearly it's an overspill of Order 66 is still continuing in sort of 10 years on. I just have an inkling that Obi-Wan isn't as weak as he once was. I think by A New Hope, yeah, you're right. Obviously, Alec Guinness was physically overwhelmed by Dave Prowse. I mean, in real life, you know, when you see them training, it would have been quite intimidating for Alec as an actor just doing his best in the role when he's got this 6'8" bodybuilder just battering him with a stick.
It would be like me versus Tyson Fury.
And nobody wants to see that. You know, there's the real world aspect, and the fact that the saber fights, as you say in A New Hope, you know, we never thought anything of that. You know, those saber fights in Star Wars Empire and Jedi, it wasn't until you saw Phantom Menace where it just stepped up tremendously and you suddenly thought, wow, they're like fencing.
And I think maybe that, again, is just down to the motivation between what Lucas wanted to portray in the original trilogy and also then how he wanted to portray Jedi in their prime. And so therefore, you know, lightsaber technique and drilling and all that kind of stuff is going to be ingrained in them, whereas barring the one very brief duel that we see between Obi-Wan and Darth Maul, in Star Wars Rebels.
Yeah.
From Revenge of the Sith up until that point, we don't know how much, you know, Obi or Ben, I should say, is you know, using his lightsaber, and probably he would be using it as little as possible. You just can't risk it, no. Can you? Even if you're in your hut or you're in your cave, you know, somebody happens for whatever reason to wander in and they see you kind of going through like the seven forms of lightsaber drills and stuff like that. Yeah, got some explaining to do. Obviously, he wants to try and stay as hidden and as far away from anybody connecting the dots to him being a former Jedi as possible. If there's going to be a proper standoff between Ben or Obi-Wan, and that's a good point. Where do we now stand? Because obviously the series is called Obi-Wan Kenobi, but are we kind of like now fairly convinced that he is now running under the name of Ben, so we should refer to him as Ben when we kind of talk about Obi-Wan in this time frame?
Well, I think hopefully this show will explain, or it maybe even show that transition, because I think to go by the name of Obi-Wan Kenobi, you know, they did in the, it certainly around the Clone Wars era and the prequel films, make it seem that, well, more than that, they were, you know, Anakin and Obi-Wan were like galactic heroes, weren't they? So the name Obi-Wan Kenobi, you would imagine, would be known in certainly, maybe not in the general populace, but in certain quarters, people would go, oh, Obi-Wan Kenobi, we remember Master Kenobi, he came to our planet, he negotiated a peace treaty, whatever it might be. Lucas said this years ago, didn't he? When people say, oh, you know, why didn't they change Luke's name from Skywalker? And Lucas was like, yeah, because Skywalker in the Star Wars galaxy is like being called Smith. That was his excuse, wasn't it? So maybe Kenobi's a more common name than you would think. Like calling a droid R2-D2. You know, really, if you looked at R2-D2's serial number, it's probably 30 digits and numbers. But he's just abbreviated to R2-D2, isn't he? You make a good point about not wanting to, you know, ignite the blade too much. You don't want to draw attention to yourself. But you go right back to A New Hope, that whole crazy old Ben, that crazy old hermit living out in the dune sea. That story, that persona, if you like, has got to be cultivated. So I really hope that's something that we start to see of in this, because they've built up. I mean, there's a bit of blurb with it. I'll read the blurb. Obi-Wan Kenobi begins 10 years after the dramatic events of Revenge of the Sith, where Obi-Wan Kenobi faced his greatest defeat, the downfall and corruption of his best friend and Jedi apprentice Anakin Skywalker, who turned to the dark side as evil Sith Lord Darth Vader.
There's no mention of his mission to Tatooine or like what he's doing or Luke Skywalker. It's purely about Obi-Wan Kenobi and Anakin Skywalker. And so they're really kind of like doubling down on that connection to the prequel trilogy. Yeah.
Very much. I mean, that does seem to be central. Unless it tanks in terms of numbers, which it won't, because there's way too much interest in this. It won't. Kathleen Kennedy said it in an interview quite recently, you know, we've had thoughts about doing something else, what more we could do. You know, and you wonder about different shows, like, for example, Book of Boba Fett. Are we going to find out at Celebration there's going to be a season two? Or is the Book of Boba Fett, that's it? That's the book. What you saw, those seven episodes, that was the Book of Boba Fett.
That's the book.
And Fett turns up in other shows now. And maybe, you know, Obi-Wan in this era, we're all between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope, Rogue One, Rebel, Solo, now Kenobi. You know, there's lots of stuff happening in that time period. A lot of it nearer to A New Hope. Bad Batch is nearer to Revenge of the Sith, obviously. But nevertheless, you know, there's a 19-year span there. And you just wonder whether there's other stories, other series, other things they want to do that could fold in Ben. You know, if you've got a Fulcrum story you want to tell, if there's something to do with Bail Organa, there's options.
Where can we pick up subsequent series? Because that's the thing, you know, they've got to be relatively careful, I think, with how much they utilise some of these legacy or classic era characters, just down to the fact that at the moment it feels like, with Andor as well, being in that kind of that time frame as well, you could end up having a rather one-sided timeline a little bit. Luckily, with Disney Plus and The Mandalorian, hopefully that's going to balance out everything happening beyond Return of the Jedi. And maybe it's a savvy thing from Lucasfilm to kind of go, right, well, we're kind of almost trying to serve the OT era fans by keeping everything very nostalgic and in that time period where the Empire and its stormtroopers, and it's all very iconic. And then, you know, for even newer fans or more progressive fans, then you've got The Mandalorian, and you've got that kind of like massive time gap between Return of Jedi and Force Awakens that they can populate. So it will be interesting to see how they kind of balance the two, because, you know, again, if you focus too heavily on one section, then you kind of neglect the other. And all this says to me is that I think we're going to get something where we can talk and talk and talk for like weeks and weeks and weeks about these episodes, and not necessarily the episodes, but maybe the ramifications and the might be's and the what ifs because of the Obi-Wan Kenobi series, which for me is what's really excited me at this point in time.
Hello, this is Sam Witwer, and you are listening to FanthaTrax.
We finally have a composer for Obi-Wan Kenobi, Natalie Holt. Marvel viewers will know her as the composer for Loki. DC fans will be very pleased to hear she's scoring the upcoming Batgirl movie, which also stars Michael Keaton back as Batman. She spoke to Vanity Fair a little bit about her experience with Star Wars, came into it as a kid, watched it with her dad, like so many of us, trained as a violinist, and does mention, when asked about her music fitting the broader scope of Star Wars music, that it does tend to skew more towards a Williams score than a Ludwig Göransson Mandalorian or Book of Boba Fett score that's a little bit more out there for Star Wars music. She mentions Kathleen Kennedy saying, regarding John Williams, I just want to write Benny a theme. Yeah. Never heard Ben Kenobi referred to as Benny. You can't deny him that, can you?
Yeah. At his age, and I think, you know, if anybody is allowed to give Obi-Wan Kenobi a nickname, I think John Williams, he can call him whatever he wants to, as far as I'm concerned. But no, this is exciting, and the cool thing is she's British. That's always good to see more Brits and that actually taking on these roles in production and not only on the screen, so that's fantastic. She goes on to say the music of John Williams basically narrated her childhood, E.T., Raiders of Lost Ark, Jurassic Park. And I think both me and you can kind of really relate to that, because I think we're in a very similar kind of camp. The themes that John Williams wrote for those films and others really do kind of shape, I think, our idea anyway of what a film score should be, and especially a Star Wars score.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, when you think of film music, your head always goes to John Williams, but Williams is the benchmark. And when she talks about his theme for Obi-Wan, she refers to it, it's reflective, it's entirely appropriate. There's elements of hope in it, but it's wistful. Especially in A New Hope, there's that sort of that lone French horn feel, which just feels so, like I say, desolate and out there in the back of beyond, which is the Dune Sea where he lives. The way she describes it feels very appropriate. But she does say that for her, the tentpole is Williams' original Star Wars score, whereas The Mandalorian, which completely feels like a Star Wars score. One thing that struck me about The Mandalorian, for example, was when I first heard it, I thought, it's got that Rocky feel to it. And then I didn't learn until after that Ludwig Göransson had scored Creed, which was the Rocky sequel, essentially. And so there was all that great logical, oh, well, that makes all the sense in the world now. And so that works brilliantly for Mandalorian, because he is a bit of a puncher, and it kind of, that Rocky vibe works for the Mandalorian as a character. So I'm all on board with that. But this, as she says, feels like, yeah, we're going back to a much more classical Star Wars feel, which makes me wonder how Andor's going to be scored. You know, that feels like it's got to go bumper to bumper with the film, which is twinned with A New Hope now, isn't it?
That's a good shout, actually. I almost wonder if potentially, yeah, we're going to have Kenobi and Andor, because of, again, like you said, where they're placed in the timeline. I think if you were to stick a left of centre Ludwig kind of Mando vibe soundtrack to those series, I mean, it might work. It might stick out like a sore thumb. I suppose it all comes down to how it played out and stuff like that, especially with Obi-Wan Kenobi, when really, if you think of Obi-Wan Kenobi, you basically think of a Force theme. I would imagine will kind of feature quite heavily in his theme anyway. It'd be nice to expand on that and maybe take it somewhere slightly different. These light motifs, these kind of character motifs, I suppose, if anything, it needs to kind of refer to the prequel trilogy in respects of the journey that Obi-Wan has taken to his point, but then also allude to his future. So it's going to be very interesting to hear, and I really can't wait. And I hope that they do release Johnny's theme for Benny, you know, as a standalone piece, like they did when he scored something for Hanny for the Solo movie.
That's a very good point. Johnny and Benny needs to be a thing, doesn't it? We need vinyl releases for these. Mando got that beautiful, Mando Season 1 got that beautiful big vinyl release, which is gorgeous. Book of Boba Fett's only been done digitally, but I say only as if that's a bad thing. They're out there. They've not hung around. They've got them out there. Fantastic. They've done it with all the Marvel stuff. So if you want to listen to any of Natalie's stuff, her Loki score is out there to listen to now on all streaming services and stuff. But hopefully there will be physical format releases. I think we still, a lot of us, maybe some don't, but I do, thirst for the physical format releases because I just want to own the damn thing.
It's a bit like the Black Series. It's kind of like it's catering to a certain audiophile, certain collector. And if those people are spending the money and supporting the vinyl productions and stuff like that. In fact, actually, Elixir, my band, you know, we put out a limited edition 500 press vinyl single actually not so long ago. And, you know, those have been selling really, really well. We do have a few copies still available, I might add. Hopefully that means that, yeah, we will see more Star Wars on vinyl as things kind of progress. And, you know, I guess maybe it might come down to downloads as well. So maybe we'll look at the downloads, and if they think there's, you know, demand for it, then they'll do it and they'll produce it and press it. Maybe we might even get like a Book of Boba Fett gatefold vinyl double album, which would be fantastic if that is the case.
For everything in one location. Daily news, reviews, interviews, podcasts, video and social media feeds. Bookmark FanthaTracks.com for Star Wars news 24/7, 365.
Speaking of the upcoming Star Wars Andor series, we could potentially be looking at 3 seasons. According to Adriano Goldman, who is the director of photography for the Andor series, he was speaking to a Brazilian TV show, so in Portuguese, and he basically says that the series I worked on was supposed to have 5 series long, but I think it's not happening. It will have 3, maybe. So the maybe could indicate that it could be 3. Or more, or less. Obviously, we haven't even received season 1 yet, and rumours that I've heard from cast and crew members who are working on season 2, it's meant to start filming late in the year. But what do you make of this? Do you think that potentially they may have truncated it because they've either extended the length of the seasons, or do you reckon they've just felt like actually 5 seasons was going to be too long for an Andor series?
To commit to 5 seasons is a lot. We'd heard that...
It's a big,
it's
big
massive,
ask. Yeah.
And we'd heard that there's... what, a dozen episodes in season 1? I mean, they've been filming for a long time. They've filmed all over the place. Goodness knows how many UK locations they've shot in. So they've really been busy. Obviously, COVID had an effect. And there's a lot of moving parts to this. So to commit to 5 seasons is huge. Now, Amazon committing to 5 seasons of a Lord of the Rings show is one thing. But Lucasfilm and Disney committing to 5 seasons of this Star Wars show is another, because there's other Star Wars shows. There's Mando, there's Bad Batch, there's Ahsoka, there's all the other stuff going on, and movies. Whereas with Amazon, they're just focusing on that Lord of the Rings thing. So you can't really compare the two. To your point, yeah, we know there's going to be 2 seasons, pretty much know there's going to be 2 seasons, at least. The guy here, yeah, Adriano, says he understood it was going to be 5 and now it's 3. And I think it goes back to also to what we were just talking about earlier on, about Kenobi, how they might not do another specific Kenobi series, but that's not to say he wouldn't turn up in another show, another storyline. What do you think?
I think you're right, definitely, to put something like 5 seasons for Andor, they would have to be really confident that it's going to really sell. And, you know, and that's not taking anything away from the character of Andor or potentially what we're getting, you know, but it could just be that maybe that's 5 years where you're committing a certain amount of budget and, you know, resources to a series. And potentially maybe in that time, you know, you could miss other opportunities because, you know, you've got things tied up for 4 or 5 years. And maybe it doesn't need it. Maybe, like you said, there's ways of actually rolling, you know, the characters of Andor into other series. I mean, for example, an end of season cameo in Kenobi. Mm. It's a very kind of Marvel thing to do, isn't it? You know, for somebody to turn up post credit scene and stuff like that. But that is, I think, probably one of the ultimate ways of actually promoting your next series for, you know, a character that I think, unlike Obi-Wan Kenobi, who is pretty much a household name, Andor is a character from that Rogue One film. Oh yeah, that's the one where everybody died. So I think they might have a little bit more work to do from a promotional standpoint to excite the general populace for that. It could be just another platform to launch other series and ways to bring in maybe a younger Ahsoka or Bail Organa and maybe do something Alderaan focused or Coruscant focused, and you know, we get our political Star Wars series that we've talked about before in the past. The fact is they've not said, oh, it's definitely going to be 3 seasons, so it means that each season is a specific story point or a mission or something, maybe, so they don't necessarily need to worry about wrapping up loads of loose ends in 3 seasons rather than 5, and maybe like each season is slightly standalone but it can currently run. So I'm not at all worried by this. I just want to see the damn thing. I just want to see, you know, it seems like such a long time ago that we saw those sneak peeks at the investors stream. It would just be nice to just see something, and hopefully, obviously, we might see something at Celebration.
Let's hope. with, for example, the sequel trilogy, as well received as they were, as much money as they made, I think most people agree, most people agree that there clearly wasn't a defined plan. When they sat down to start filming Force Awakens, they didn't know where they were leading this whole storyline through to The Rise of Skywalker. So there's that lack of planning thing that's fairly well discussed around everywhere. And you think, well, maybe they thought when they started on Andor, oh, 5 seasons of this guy going around the galaxy, helping build the rebellion, making connections, pulling these rebel cells together. It writes itself. It's easy. And then perhaps, maybe, you know, in a sort of a standalone adventure style set of stories, you know, that certain characters start to come in and become part of the broader fabric of the show, and it builds itself. So you haven't got to overthink it, but the structure of the show means that, oh, we can 5 seasons, 60 stories, 12 a year, easy. We can do that. No problem. That's easy. And then they actually sat down and thought, well, actually, no, that's not going to work. We need...
Hang on a sec.
You know, we need a defined storyline. And they actually sit down and work up a defined storyline because they don't want to be contradicting themselves left, right, and centre and clashing with other Star Wars storytelling, because there's so many avenues of telling Star Wars stories. I'd suddenly go, well, actually, if we do 3 seasons of 8 episodes and the whole Andor project is 24 episodes, not 60, across 3 seasons, not 5, it's more manageable. We've got a point A, point M, point Z, whatever. You know, we kind of know where we're going. We're doing a rewatch of Breaking Bad at the moment. The structure of that show is so clever. It's problem, solution, solution sets up the next problem, and so next on and problem. So on. And the structure of the show is dominoes, isn't it, Breaking Bad? It's continual domino effect, to the point where they'd got that down so brilliantly, you knew that whatever problem or solution they came up with, that was your plot for the next episode. You can't structure every show like that. And you wouldn't want to structure a Star Wars show like that. You know, you don't want people second guessing. And I just wonder what their tone is for Andor, you know, what they're aiming for. Are they aiming for a story of the week, or is it very carefully planned and structured?
And that's the thing, isn't it? Because I think that opening scene we get Andor in Rogue One is kind of like the tone that we're going to get for the series. But the problem with that is it's quite dark in terms of, like, I mean, not talking necessarily about the cinematography, what he does, the ramifications of all that is quite dark. So therefore you think, well, maybe we've got to see a transition. Maybe it's a bit of a tragedy in some respects. We see this bright-eyed, ambitious freedom fighter who, you know, wants to save the galaxy and down with the Empire, and then just kind of see how he comes just like an instrument of the rebellion and kind of gets dragged into, obviously, assassinations or, you know, sabotage and insurrection and all that kind of stuff.
He's been in this fight since he was 6 years old, hasn't he?
Exactly, yeah. For me, anyway, I think I could probably go all 3 or all 5 seasons of not actually having to see an Andor flashback to a 6-year-old Andor. I don't actually necessarily need to see a literal flashback as to what happened or why he did it. I mean, just have it in a standard conversation, you know? I mean, Diego Luna is an awesome actor, and if anybody could sell a heart-wrenching, this is what happened to my parents kind of sob story on screen without having to rely so heavily on flashbacks, I think he can do it.
Hi, this is Julie Dolan, the voice of Princess Leia, and you're listening to Fanthatrax. It's your only hope.
Ewan McGregor will be appearing at Celebration Anaheim. He's at the show on Friday and Saturday, signing autographs, posing for photographs, $299 each. A lot of money, but if you haven't got them already, you've missed out because they're completely sold out. Great news that he's going to be there. Basically means, I would imagine, that we will be seeing Ewan up on stage talking about not only Kenobi, which obviously we want to hear about, but it's the 20th anniversary of Attack of the Clones. So it would be rather nice to hear him talk a little bit about his experiences on the prequels as well. What do you make of Ewan coming? Mm-hmm. It's wasn't entirely confident that we'd be seeing him at this celebration, but great news that we are.
Yeah, fantastic news. And like you said, I think if anybody needs to be at this celebration, I think Ewan McGregor does. Yeah, £232.52, according to my converter from US to UK. So yeah, it's a pretty penny to drop for an auto and a photo. But he doesn't come around very often. So if Kenobi is as good as we think it is, it's probably going to just go up and up and up. So that being said, get him on a Kenobi panel, and let's also do a Attack of a Clone retrospective, or a prequels, you know, retrospective. We haven't had any kind of confirmation that was going to be a YouTube stream, but I'm hoping that there will be, because obviously, you know, I'm going to be sat at home whilst you're in sunny Anaheim. So hopefully I might even get a better seat than you guys will. So
you probably will. You'll probably see more than I'm going to see, that's for sure. One other thought occurs. We've just had the trailer or the first trailer or teaser for Thor Love and Thunder, which sees the return of Natalie Portman, looking freaking awesome, by the way. Gotta say, oh my goodness. And so you've got her back, you've got Ewan and Hayden back in their signature roles. Wouldn't it be fantastic, given they're all part of the Disney family now, Marvel doing Thor and, you know, obviously Lucasfilm doing Star Wars. Wouldn't it be great if we did have that prequel panel? George comes out and Ewan and Hayden come out and Natalie comes out and Rick McCullum comes out and we finally get that big, all the people we want there all together. You know, we had Hayden at Celebration 2, if I remember, and I think he was at 3. But to have them all together be incredible, wouldn't it?
It would be almost like a Force Awakens panel from San Diego in Hall H, you know, when everybody came out. Yeah, I mean, and there's probably no reason why she can do that. I mean, obviously, it's always going to be down to scheduling and stuff like that. But yeah, you know, the fact that she's back in the Marvel kind of universe, hopefully, yeah, maybe that will just have a little bit of sway and maybe she'll be up for it, because that would be fantastic. Ewan aside, we've also had other celebration announcements for more celebrity sign-ins and appearances. Billie Lord, who played Lieutenant Connix and, of course, is Carrie Fisher's daughter, and she did that beautiful dedication to Carrie at the 40th anniversary panel at Star Wars Celebration Orlando, I think. Also, Kelly Marie Tran is going to be there signing autographs and having photo ops. Kelly is, when I've spoken to her at the premieres, one of the nicest people you'll ever meet in your entire life.
I still keep thinking that at some juncture, Disney Plus is going to announce something beyond The Rise of Skywalker. There's got to be announcements this year. You know, we've had no real big announcements for a couple of years. I just wonder whether or not she's not there by accident, you know, as a lone sort of sequel trilogy.
Well, both of them.
Well, exactly. Yeah. You know, I just wonder if there's some traction or some potential for an announcement. Very good guests and no doubt going to have some great, interesting stories to tell.
Okay, so let's leave the celebration news right there, and hopefully with celebration just around the corner, we will have more news next week and more announcements. But Mark, can you point the listeners in the direction of how they can get in touch if they want to send one in?
I certainly can. If you want to be a part of the action and stay updated on all the latest Star Wars news, visit fanthetracks.com or check out the free... Fanthetracks app through the App Store to follow us on your mobile device. You can reach out to us and send in your listeners' questions by emailing radio@fanthetracks.com. So, yeah, send them in. Questions, queries, thoughts, complaints. We'll read them all out. Comment, like, and share on any of our social media feeds at Fanthetracks. And be sure to subscribe, leave a review, preferably a 5-star one, on Amazon Music, Audible, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcatcher or smart speaker of choice. And as always, thanks to James Semple for composing the Fanthetracks intro, Adam O'Brien for our making tracks Hopi music, and Mark Daniel and Vanessa Marshall for our voiceovers. Remember, tune in to our Fanthetracks new show, Good Morning Tatooine. It's live Sunday evenings, 9 o'clock UK, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific on Facebook and YouTube. On Friday night, 7 o'clock, tune in to Fanthetracks Radio for episodes of Desert Planet Discs, Cannon Fodder, Planet Leia, Panther Down Under, and Start Your Engines. And that's me done before my voice gives out.
Brilliant. Thanks, mate. Thank you very much. I will catch up with you, no doubt, during the week, and we will have a good old chinwag about more Star Wars stuff next week. So, to everybody else, thank you very much for listening. It's always appreciated. And, yeah, send those comments in and questions. We love hearing from you. But, of course, as always, stay safe, take care, and may the Force be with you.
Coming up next on Fanthetracks Radio, it's Planet Leia.